All right, so today we're diving headfirst into the origins of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story.
It really is, full of twists and turns, political maneuvering, cultural clashes, you name it.
Absolutely, and it's a classic example of how what might seem like small choices can have these really big consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the birth of a nation, but also this really deep division that came with it.
Yeah, and to understand how we got there, we got to rewind a bit.
Okay.
So imagine Ireland under British rule.
Right.
Right. Not exactly a recipe for peaceful coexistence.
Right.
So along comes the Home Rule movement saying, hey, let's have an Irish parliament, you know, still part of Britain, but with more say over our own affairs.
Yeah.
Seems like a decent compromise, right?
Right, exactly. More control over their own affairs, but not full independence.
Right.
And this is where the cracks start to show, because Ireland's already split down the middle at this point.
Oh, really?
You've got the Unionists, who are mostly Protestant, who wanted to stick with Britain. And then you've got the Nationalists, largely Catholic, who wanted a completely independent Ireland.
So it's like two roommates who can't agree on what to order for takeout.
Exactly.
But instead of pizza toppings, it's the fate of a nation at stake.
That's a good way to put it.
But it wasn't quite as simple as just religion, was it?
No, not even close.
Okay.
It ran way deeper than that.
How so?
You've got to imagine centuries of Protestant dominance, especially, you know, among the wealthy elite.
Right.
They saw home rule as this huge threat to their power, their culture, their entire way of life.
So it's more like they were afraid of losing their seat at the head of the table.
Right.
And home rule was like someone pulling that chair out from under them.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
So it's about control then.
Yeah. And then you add in the religious dimension as well.
Okay.
The slogan, home rule is Rome rule, really captures the fear that a lot of Protestants had at the time.
What do you mean?
They really believed that an independent Ireland would mean Catholic rule.
Right.
And that meant potential discrimination against them.
Right. So it's like their worst nightmare.
Exactly.
And reading through the source material, one thing that really jumped out at me was this thing called the Ní Timír Decree.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It seemed to just add fuel to the fire.
Absolutely. Yeah. This was a decree from the Catholic Church in 1907. And it basically said that children of mixed marriages had to be raised Catholic.
Wow.
So, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a Protestant in this climate. Talk about fueling anxieties.
Yeah, makes sense.
Like you said, it really highlights how intertwined religion and politics were at this time.
Right. Every decision seemed to have these hidden layers of meaning and consequence.
Yeah. And it's not just about religion and power either. It's also about people's livelihoods.
Oh, right. Because the north of Ireland, especially Ulster, was a real industrial powerhouse, wasn't it?
Exactly.
And they were very connected to Britain economically.
Absolutely.
So for Unionists, it's like, hold on. You want to mess with the very system that's keeping our lights on.
Exactly. They were very much against it.
So in their eyes, home rule seemed like this three-headed monster. Political upheaval, religious persecution, and economic ruin.
Yeah, it's no wonder they weren't exactly thrilled about the idea.
No kidding. So what did they do about it?
They weren't just going to sit back. They formed groups like the Ulster Volunteer Force, a paramilitary organization ready to fight home rule by any means necessary. And they signed this thing called the Ulster Solemn League and Covenant.
What was that?
This massive pledge against home rule signed by almost 500,000 people.
Wow. So we're talking a full-on resistance movement here.
Absolutely. This was serious.
Wow. And of course, the Nationalists weren't just going to watch from the sidelines either, right?
Of course not. No way.
So what happened?
This is where things get really interesting.
Oh.
In response to this UVF, you see the rise of the Irish Volunteers.
Okay.
It's almost like watching two trains racing towards each other on the same track.
Well,
Ireland at this point was teetering on the brink of civil war, and it was all because of this fundamental disagreement about its future.
Talk about a power keg. And as if things couldn't get more complicated, World War I explodes onto the scene.
Right. Talk about bad timing.
Yeah. It's almost hard to imagine how things could get even more complicated, but, you know, this is Irish history we're talking about.
That's right. And the war really had a way of reshaping the entire landscape.
I bet. So how did the war end up impacting Ireland's fight for self-determination?
Well, on the one hand, it kind of forced the whole home rule debate onto the back burner.
Right, because everyone's got a bigger problem to deal with.
Exactly. But on the other hand, it really breathed new life into Irish nationalism.
Interesting. How so?
Well, because a lot of people saw Britain's war as their opportunity.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah, their chance to really fight for independence. And it was groups like Sinn Féin and the IRA who really stepped onto the stage during this period.
Okay, so we're starting to see even more radical groups and ideologies emerge from this vacuum created by the war.
Exactly. They saw Britain's preoccupation with the war as the perfect chance to strike a blow for independence.
And nothing says that quite like the Easter Rising of 1916.
Oh, absolutely. A pivotal moment in Irish history, for sure.
From what I understand, it was a pretty bold move.
Right. It was a full-on armed rebellion against British rule right in the heart of Dublin.
Wow. That's a pretty big statement.
It was. And strategically, it was a disaster.
What happened?
The rebels were totally outnumbered, outgunned, and they were quickly defeated.
Oh, so it was a failure.
Militarily, yes, but it had this massive impact on public opinion.
So it's one of those lose the battle, win the war situations.
You could definitely say that.
Okay, how so?
Well, you see, the British, they made a critical error.
What was that?
Instead of treating these captured rebels as prisoners of war,
right,
they executed them.
Oh, wow.
And by doing that, they unintentionally created martyrs.
Right, because suddenly these rebels weren't just rebels anymore, but they were symbols of Irish resistance. Right? Like standing up to British rule, no matter the cost.
Exactly. It's incredible when you think about it.
Yeah. The executions really outraged a lot of people in Ireland.
They did. Even those who had been on the fence about home rule before, it was like a switch flipped.
So the brutality of the response to the Easter Rising actually helped to galvanize the movement for independence.
In a way, yes. Definitely unintended consequences.
And that set the stage for what happened next. The partition of Ireland.
Exactly.
So we've danced around this, but let's dig in. What exactly do we mean when we say partition?
So essentially, in 1920, with things in Ireland still incredibly volatile, the British government passed the Government of Ireland Act.
And I'm guessing this is where Ireland gets sliced in two.
Yeah, pretty much.
So after all that resistance, the Unionists basically got what they wanted. A part of Ireland where they were in control.
Yeah, in a way you could see it like that.
So how did they even decide which parts would become Northern Ireland? Was it just like drawing a random line on a map?
Oh, no. It was very calculated.
Really?
They deliberately drew the boundaries to make sure there was a solid Protestant and therefore largely Unionist majority in the North.
Wow. So it was rigged from the start.
Basically, yeah.
So how did Irish nationalists react to that?
As you can imagine, they saw it as a complete betrayal, a blatant attempt to divide and conquer.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There was this attempt to redraw the border with something called the Boundary Commission, but ultimately it failed to make any real changes, and with that, the partition of Ireland was basically set in stone.
Well, it's like trying to heal a deep cut with a Band-Aid. You might stop the bleeding, but the scar is still there.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. And this is where those deep-seated divisions and resentments really take root. We now have this newly formed Northern Ireland, but it's a land divided.
So what was life actually like for people? Could they just coexist, or was it just this constant state of tension?
Well, that's a great question, and that's what we'll be diving into next time.
A cliffhanger. All right, well, I can't wait to unpack that more next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
So we left off talking about a divided land, a wound that cut deep. And as we delve into life in those early years of Northern Ireland, it becomes clear that the troubles were far from over.
It's almost like they drew a line on a map and said, all right, now coexist, as if decades of tension and mistrust could just magically disappear. So what was life actually like for people on the ground? Did those everyday interactions ever offer a glimmer of hope, or was it just a constant state of tension?
Well, a house divided really captures the reality. Imagine two communities deeply suspicious of each other, suddenly forced to share a roof for Catholics. Now a minority within Northern Ireland life became incredibly difficult.
Yeah, the materials we have really don't paint a pretty picture.
Yeah.
Discrimination, intimidation, even violence were all too common. Were there any specific examples that stood out to you?
Oh, there are several, unfortunately. One that comes to mind is the case of Belfast's outdoor relief riots in 1932.
Okay, what happened?
Well, with unemployment sky high during the Depression, thousands of families, both Catholic and Protestant, relied on these really meager government handouts.
Boy, everyone's struggling.
Exactly. But then these rumors started spreading that Catholic families were receiving preferential treatment.
Oh, no.
And that's when the riots erupted.
Talk about a powder keg economic hardship combined with deep-seated mistrust.
Yeah.
It's a recipe for disaster.
It certainly was. The riots lasted for days, resulting in several deaths and widespread property damage.
It's just tragic.
It really was, and it highlighted how quickly economic woes could just exacerbate these existing sectarian tensions. It was like a pressure cooker, and the pressure just kept building.
And I imagine that pressure was felt most acutely in the political arena. We talked earlier about how the boundaries for Northern Ireland were drawn to favor unionists. How did that actually play out in the governing of the state?
Well, in essence, it created a one-party state.
How so?
Well, remember that first past the post-electoral system we discussed earlier?
Right, the one where the candidate with the most votes wins even if they don't have a majority.
Exactly. Now combine that with this built-in unionist majority, and you have a recipe for nationalist disenfranchisement.
So even if there was a significant number of nationalist voters, their votes were essentially meaningless.
Pretty much their votes were often split, which made it almost impossible for them to actually secure a real political voice.
So even though there's this new parliament in Northern Ireland, it wasn't exactly a beacon of democracy and representation.
That's putting it mildly. And to make matters worse, they engaged in practices like gerrymandering.
Okay, gerrymandering, for those of us who might need a quick refresher.
So imagine drawing the lines of voting districts in a way that gives one party an unfair advantage.
So basically rigging the system to maintain control. Did they even try to hide what they were doing?
Not really. A classic example is Derry City. Despite having a larger Catholic population, unionists were able to manipulate the electoral boundaries in a way that gave them control of the city council for decades.
It's like something out of a political thriller. Only this was real life. With all of this stacked against them, how did nationalists even begin to fight for their rights?
It was an uphill battle, to say the least, but they did resist. They organized protests, demanding civil rights, challenging the very foundations of the state. But their efforts were often met with resistance, sometimes violently.
It sounds like this just vicious cycle of tension, discrimination, and unrest just kept spinning.
Yeah.
Was there ever a moment when things seemed like they might change for the better?
Well, World War II had a profound impact on Northern Ireland, albeit in unexpected ways. While the First World War had fueled Irish nationalism, the second had the opposite effect, at least in the North.
How so? Did the war somehow bring people together?
In a way, yes. Remember how the North had suffered economically between the wars?
Right, things were really tough.
Well, with the outbreak of World War II, Northern Ireland's industries, particularly shipbuilding and manufacturing, became absolutely crucial to the British war effort.
So the war actually brought them a period of economic revival.
Exactly. Factories roared back to life, unemployment plummeted, and there was this renewed sense of shared purpose as people, regardless of religion, rallied behind the war effort.
That's amazing. It's like the war brought them a sense of unity that had been missing before.
To a certain extent, yes. But of course, it wasn't all smooth sailing.
Right, because war is never that simple. What happened?
Well, there was the Belfast Blitz.
What was that?
It was a series of devastating air raids on the city in 1941. Over 1,000 people were killed and tens of thousands of homes were destroyed.
It's a grim reminder that even in times of supposed unity, conflict leaves its mark. But it sounds like the shared experience of the war, both the hardships and the economic revival, had a lasting impact on Northern Ireland.
It did. It solidified their ties to Britain and in many ways cemented the partition of Ireland. The divisions that had been sown in those early years would continue to shape the region for decades to come. So we left off with this idea of the war effort bringing a sense of unity right. But it's important to remember that those deep-seated divisions never really went away.
Right. They were just sort of papered over for a while.
Exactly. And as we move further into the 20th century, those cracks would really start to show again.
And that's where things get really complicated, right? Because we're talking about the Troubles now.
Yeah, the Troubles, a period of intense conflict that lasted for decades. It's a complex story with roots in everything we've discussed so far.
So when we look back at those early years of Northern Ireland, what's the lasting legacy? What impact did those early decisions have on the Troubles?
Well, one thing that's clear is that the partition itself, the way it was carried out, it created this system that was inherently unstable.
Because it didn't really address those underlying tensions, right? If anything, it probably made them worse.
Exactly. And the discriminatory practices that we talked about, things like gerrymandering and discrimination in housing and employment, that just further alienated the nationalist community.
Right. So you have this whole system that's basically set up to privilege one side over the other.
Exactly. And that created this breeding ground for resentment and mistrust that would eventually boil over.
And it wasn't just about politics and the economics either, right? There was a cultural dimension to it as well.
Absolutely. You know, for a long time, even things like flying the Irish flag or speaking the Irish language were seen as provocative acts by some unionists.
So basically, any expression of Irish identity was seen as a threat.
In a way, yes, and that really speaks to the depth of the division that existed.
It's almost like they were trying to erase a whole part of their identity.
Yeah, it was a very complex and often tragic situation, and it's important to remember that the troubles weren't inevitable. You know, there were points along the way where things could have gone differently.
So what you're saying is that history isn't just this predetermined set of events, that there's actually agency involved.
Exactly. The choices that people made, the actions they took, it all mattered. And understanding those choices, that's how we can learn from the past and hopefully create a better future.
And I think that's a good place to leave it today. It's been a really heavy but important conversation, and I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us.
It's been my pleasure, really. It's so important to keep these conversations going, to remember and to learn from the past.
Absolutely. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the origins of Northern Ireland. It's a complex and often painful history, but it's a history that continues to shape the present day.
It does. And as we've seen, it's a history that's full of twists and turns, but ultimately, it's a story about people and their struggles for identity, for justice, and for peace.
Well said. And on that note, thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time for another deep dive.